You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome in. Good morning. It is Football Sunday here on WEEI. Christian Arcan with you, and the whole gang's in town. Teddy's here. Hey, Shime's here. Mego's here. Ken Laird's back there.
Woo!
I didn't think we'd see a repeat of the Ken Laird production experience, and yet here we are. We got a great show here today. All the usual bells and whistles. We will be talking with Tom E. Curran a little bit later on. We will have Wiggy's Keys. We will have our top Ted list and all that other fun stuff. But we will start with what was a disappointing beginning to this season for the Patriots last weekend. A game that we talked about ad nauseum leading into it after an offseason that I think we have kind of split opinions on as to how much was actually done and how much progress was really made in bringing this Patriots team back to where it was. But I think one thing we can all agree on before we get to our main takes of the day is that the Patriots certainly in their first game didn't look much better than they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, in that first half, they weren't terrible. I mean, the offense was okay. Drake was moving it a little bit. The first pass, he sailed, but after that, he kind of settled in. That second quarter, I thought, was pretty good overall. They unfortunately missed a field goal, but the team was putting points on the board. And then in the second half, whether it was the Raiders just made great adjustments or the offensive play calling, which I hated, just did not go over well, they were unable to do anything. They decided to abandon the run with a lead in the second half, which made no sense to me. And they threw the ball 46 times in a game they probably didn't need to, and end up losing. Like, it's just, it was a tough outing in that second half.
I mean, you're exactly right to think that it did feel like we were watching the same product from last year. And I think the biggest thing was the bad football that was being played, right? So, you know, Mike Vrabel, when he came in, he's like, you know, basically he said that the baseline for this team needs to just be at least play clean football. Whether or not we, you know, have the players or not to win games, that's important. But the most important thing is that we play clean football. Well, they didn't in that first game. I mean, they gave up four sacks. The nine penalties, bad special teams play, interceptions. Just
fumbles.
Yeah. So it was bad football, and I think that was what disheartened me the most. That, and I just was hoping to see a little bit more, Mago, from Drake May in that first game. I didn't. I saw a lot of the same stuff that he was doing last year, and so it was, to Christian's point, very reminiscent to me in that first week's performance, a lot of what I saw from last year.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about Drake May. I think that if Drake had had a stronger day, we would have, even if they lost, we would have felt like the product was better in a more meaningful way than it was last year. Because I do think that the football was still better than most of what we saw from Mayo's teams, excluding that week one performance against the Bengals, which was a Patriots team that we didn't see for the rest of the season in 2024.
I like that team.
But I like that team too. That team was pretty easy to root for. Yeah. They were disciplined, like you said. They played good fundamental football. And I think for me, that was the biggest disappointment from last Sunday, going along with what you said, Ted, which was we thought from a Mike Vrabel team that they were going to be fundamentally sound, that they weren't going to be missing tackles, giving up yards catch, that you can understand rookies like Will Campbell and Jared Wilson playing on the left side, on the blind side, and picking up penalties. But other guys, like, I don't want to totally call him out because he was great and talked to me in the locker room after, but a vet like Austin Hooper, he knew right after the game, he was like, my hand placement on that was questionable. I should not have had a holding call. Some of those penalties, just some of that stuff, it felt so much more loosey-goosey than I expected from the first outing from a Vrabel team.
And another thing, real quick, Christian, their biggest issue last year on defense was they couldn't get to the quarterback.
Yep.
They were the worst in the NFL getting in sacks. They got four sacks last week, but it was all on blitzes. Can you get to the quarterback without having to send extra coverage guys? That's going to be an important thing for this team as well.
It certainly will. We are about to go around the room and give our top takes of the week. But before we do that, Football Sunday here on WEEI is sponsored by Cars for Kids. Now would be a great time to clean out your garage and donate that old car to Cars for Kids. See how easy it is. Call today, 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS, or online at carsforkids.com. A lot of you mentioned Drake May. Let's go ahead, Teddy, and start with you, your main topic of the day as we go into week 2 here against the Miami Dolphins in Miami. Miami?
We're going to do plate talk. Okay, a lot of talk this week about, you know, is there too much on Drake May's plate? And a lot of those discussions was the genesis of these discussions were basically because of how Drake May looked in week one. Just didn't look comfortable in the pocket, very skittish, just didn't look comfortable. If you remember the first play of the game on offense for the Patriots, he drops back to pass, and I mean, boom, he pulls that ball down, and he takes off on a scramble run for a few yards. And it just right there from the very beginning didn't look like he was comfortable. So naturally, it's led all week to discussion of, you know, Josh McDaniels is known for having a very difficult system. He puts a lot on his quarterbacks. Is that an issue? And this is what Josh McDaniels had to say about that question earlier this week.
No. We haven't given him anything more than what we've given him all year, which is not too much. We have to understand it's his first game in our system. I think we all learned a lot from each experience we've had, you know, every practice, Washington, joint practice, Minnesota, preseason games, you know, the little that we were able to work together, obviously. And then, you know, the first full game, you know, that we have an opportunity to go through our operation and see things for the first time and use our rules and follow our rules. Thought he made a lot of good plays, thought he made a lot of good decisions, but I'm focused really on the process of him getting better every day.
I mean, Josh is right, and I, you know, now that I've come to the dark side of the business, and now I'm the critiquer, and not the one being critiqued anymore, I do forget sometimes that you do have to have patience, and there is a pump the brakes kind of let's have patience thing with this, but there's also a side of me that feels like Drake should be further along than he is. I do trust that when Josh says he's not putting too much on, I just can't imagine him. Most football coaches, if a guy can't handle it, you know, why would you cut off your nose to spite your face? So I do believe him when he says that. And so let's just hope that Drake starts to acclimate to this offense a little bit quicker than he has, and he starts playing a little bit better. But
he has to, doesn't this, he? I mean,
he has to. He has to. And this is what I'm going to say. All these people are telling me to pump the brakes because I was critical of Drake this week.
Pump your brakes.
I hear you. But I'll tell you what. Don't tell me to pump the brakes next year. I'm going to give him this year to prove to me that he is the guy. And if the end of the season I haven't seen a big, big improvement, then get ready to just me bludgeon you with, I'm not sure this is the guy, because I believed in this guy all season last year. I wanted to see more from him in training camp. I haven't, and I got to see more this year, or otherwise I'm going to be very, very disappointed.
Now, hold on a minute. Why do you have to pump the brakes? Because we're going week by week, and we're going to grade him week by week, right? He looked like he regressed in week one.
Right, but you don't declare him a bust. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to be doing that.
I'm not doing that.
Like, when people are like, pump your brakes. Well, he pumped your brakes. He looked like he regressed in week one, and his accuracy was really bad. And it was very frustrating to see him in the first two series, like you said, duck his head, have the football, and just take off. Like, that to me does not look like, maybe he's not comfortable in the system. And I know Shime's over here chomping at the bit to talk about what Josh McDaniels is doing to his guy. But it's okay to sit here and say the quarterback looked like he took a step backwards in week one. Maybe that's not indicative of who he's going to be this entire season, and we'll give him the season to develop. But he didn't look good.
I want to say this, if you don't mind me jumping in here, Shime.
What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, what are you going to do about it?
I'm not going to do anything.
What are any of us
doing? I'm just sitting, waiting patiently with a smile on my face.
We had Brian Hoyer on earlier this week on the afternoon show, and we were very critical of him leading into that interview, and then when Brian came on, he had a whole totally different viewpoint, and his argument would be, Mago, if he was sitting here instead of me, would be, well, did you see that play he checked into to get the ball to DeMario Douglas on that touchdown? He read it. It was a nice – he audibled into that. He did have the most completions he's had in his career. He did have the most passing yards that he's had in his career. Did you see that throw to Hunter Henry on the sideline, down the seam? So there are some arguments to go against it, but I kind of feel more in your camp. I feel like there's still – even – then there should have been more. 46 pass attempts, Christian. He had 46.
That's a lot.
And still didn't get the 300 yards passing.
Chris Schein, why did the offense not look good last week?
Because Josh McDaniels stinks. This guy sucks.
Here's the nuance we're looking for.
Yeah, I don't understand why he has a job.
No.
What he has done to Drake May is put a stallion in a dog park. Like, it makes no sense. This guy is... He is and always has been a gunslinger. He is a big game hunter. He wants to attack down the field. He wants to run the football when those options aren't open down the field. And instead, what Josh McDaniels has him doing is running the Mac Jones offense. Ted, as a professional football player, I have two questions for you.
Yes, sir.
One, when you have a certain skill set with
Take
a player.
Two.
Yeah, I need to. I'm all hyped up.
When you have
a certain skill set with a player, what do you do as a coach? Do you tend to just run your scheme, or do you fit your scheme around the strengths of that player?
It's the latter. It's definitely the latter.
Okay. And that's exactly what Josh McDaniels hasn't been doing.
It's got to be a long-term vision of where this guy's going to be.
Also, if you have a really good quarterback who also is very mobile, I don't know, like a guy like Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, even a Bo Nix to that extent, do you kind of put in his head, we really don't want you running too much. We want you to get down. We want you to slide. We want you to take care of yourself. Or do you let the guy run?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He had four rushing attempts.
And two of them were in the first play of the first two drives.
Yeah.
And they were just like...
And they were quarterback scrambles.
Everybody was covered.
So only one real quarterback design run play.
It didn't even feel like it. Like, it just... It was just...
It was weird. It was on a first and 10, kind of a weird... It was a weird... Playouts in the outside.
Are you not going to acknowledge that May didn't look good, though?
So, May made some bad passes.
Right.
I don't disagree.
He airmailed a bunch of passes that he should have made.
He airmailed a couple, but he also made some really good throws. Yeah. There were a couple throws down the sideline. The throw to Pop Douglas. Like, there were some really good plays. I understand that you're going to get some bad passes. I fully am aware of that. But at the same time, a lot of those bad passes didn't end up biting him in the ass outside of, like, the interception.
I thought
you
were going to say at the same time they were Josh McDaniels.
But the interception, which he had Max Crosby in his grill for, couldn't follow through on the throw, so the throw was a little high. Like, I just think people need to recognize that Josh McDaniels is currently running the exact same offense he ran with Tom Brady, Brian Hoyer, and Mac Jones. And now he's running it with a quarterback that is nothing like any of those three prior quarterbacks. That's Josh McDaniels' biggest issue. He has been good when Bill Belichick has been there to guide his hand and tell him what to do. Right now, Mike Vrabel seems to have allowed him to try and be self-sufficient. Josh McDaniels cannot be self-sufficient. That's why he sucked as a head coach. He never won more than 8 games, and he was terrible at calling plays on those teams, too. Josh McDaniels is not a good offensive coordinator, and he's ruining my guy, and it is infuriating me.
I disagree.
That's fine.
I'm skeptical about what Josh is going to be able to do here this year because it's the first time without Belichick, and I think that's here, and I think that's totally fair. But I don't think you can blame the scheme for, okay, like I'm not as obsessed with the interceptions and turnovers as a lot of other people because I think you can live with that if you can erase it with a big play after. And even within that scheme, like the scheme is not telling him on the next series to go out and sail over Pop Douglas and sail over Hunter Henry. That's Drake's mechanics, and he spoke
footwork
to that this
wasn't
week.
Good. I agree.
I don't want to sound like I'm down on Drake because I'm not. I'm just saying I think we need to acknowledge it was not a good performance last week. He has 16 more games, and I think it'll look a lot better. But to sit here and villainize the scheme and the system, I think is ignoring that he only had 64% of his passes on target last Sunday compared to 76% on his average all last season. That's a serious regression, and I don't think you look at it and say it's because the screen passes are too short.
No, but a lot of that is because they were throwing the ball way too much, like especially in the second half.
I do agree with that, and that threads very nicely into what I'm going to
talk about. Go ahead. Like,
Mega, we're running out of time, so Mega, what's wrong with the offense?
Okay, well, mine is just that I think this will help Drake May a lot. It's just you got to figure out how to run the ball.
Especially with the lead.
That was one of the other biggest disappointments from last week was that I thought the run blocking was going to be one of the stronger points of this offensive line that we have so many question marks about. I'm sure just like you, Shime, like I was screaming for Travion Henderson more in the first half. And I think that that will support your quarterback. You can't have him trying to drop back and throw 46. I mean, he had 46 attempted passes. I think he dropped back like 50 times.
Yeah, so, 53 times.
Exactly. Yeah. So I you got to get that run game going. The second half was brutal. If you look at what the Colts did against Miami last week, and they put up 156 rushing yards on that Miami defense. I know the Miami secondary is questionable in itself, but I just you have to establish the run.
We'll need a more consistent, 100%. Fine-tuned run plan that we believe in and quit worrying about some things.
Ooh, shots fired.
Yep, certainly is. My main thing here is a continuation of what I said last week, and that's the defense. Not really showing up all that much. I thought that they gave up way too many yards to Geno Smith for the second year in a row. Bowers tore him apart. Myers tore him apart. That kid Tucker with the touchdown in the beginning there. And
the big third down.
Dante Thornton with that. Yeah, the rookie who had that crazy move on what's his name there?
Carlton Davis, in the secondary.
Carlton Davis, which was just brutal. And I think indicative of where this team really is starting off at again. I think that with Gonzalez out and Keon White out, it's going to be another struggle here against the team that's not very good with the Dolphins. We saw them. I think they were the most hapless team in the first week. But they do own the Patriots for whatever reason. It's in Miami. And not having those two guys there, I don't think is going to help them. So I'm ready for the defense to make a statement today. All right. We're going to get on to our first break of the day here on WEEI Football Sunday. When we come back, much to get to, including a trade, another second-round pick wide receiver out the door and another bust. Also, we'll talk about another receiver who's actually doing very well in Kayshon Booty and a couple other topics as well that's coming up here next on Football Sunday.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. Your New England Patriots kick off at 1 o'clock this afternoon down in Miami to take on Tua and the 0-1 Dolphins. The Patriots, we already know, out for today's game are Christian Gonzalez and Keon White. Morgan Moses is listed as questionable. If he's held out of the game, rookie Marcus Bryant would be in line to get his first career start. Make sure to keep it locked here on WEEI after the Patriots game for the Six Rings postgame show hosted by Hart and Fitzy. The Cowboys have made Tyler Smith the highest paid interior offensive lineman in the NFL with a 4-year extension worth $96 million. Full slate of action for you today. 1 o'clock window, we have the Jaguars at the Bengals, the Giants at the Cowboys, Bears at Lions, Rams at Titans, 49ers at Saints, Bills at Jets, Seahawks at Steelers, and the Browns are at the Baltimore Ravens. In the 4 o'clock window, only 3 games today because we have the Broncos at the Colts, the Panthers at the Cardinals, and we have a rematch of last year's Super Bowl as the Eagles head to Kansas City to take on Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, which you can also catch right here or over on AM 850. Sunday Night Football tonight is the Falcons and Michael Penix in Minnesota against J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings. You can also catch that game on AM 850 with kickoff at 8:20. Boston College fell to Stanford last night as Billy O and the Eagles went scoreless in the second half. Final score of that one was 30-20. In non-football news, the Boston Red Sox lost to the Yankees last night 5-3. Brian Bello went 5 innings, allowing 4 runs on 5 hits, including a Jazz Chisholm home run in the 5th. Sox try to salvage the series this evening on Sunday Night Baseball with the pig on the mound, Garrett Crochet. First pitch, 7 p.m. right here on the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network.
Oi,
Shaw's,
oi.
Shaw's and Star Market, go shopping, get rewarded. Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the game for you here. And make sure to tune in to the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show at 6:10. Today is the day. It's the Shaw's and Star Market Grand Slam Summer Sweepstakes game for our 10 lucky finalists. If our hometown team hits a Grand Slam during the game, our finalists will win free groceries for a year from Shaw's and Star Market. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Drake May with some plate talk there. It's WEEI Football Sunday. Arcan, Teddy, Shime, and Mego all here with you until 1 o'clock. We'll go inside the locker room with Mego in about 20 minutes. In the meantime, I want to revisit this fight you two were just having because it was a good one.
Rough.
About Drake May, Josh McDaniels, the offense, the system, and all of that. Now, I'm a little torn on this because I seem to recall Mac Jones in his third year, after a year of Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, they hired Bill O'Brien, and everyone said the same thing. Finally, a real offensive coach. This is going to be an adult. It's going to be just like when Josh was here the last time, and Mac had that great year, and watch how much different it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it was worse. I mean, it was worse than it was in the Patricia year, which is unbelievable. But
that was hard to believe.
Sometimes you just break something, you know? Like, sometimes something's just broken. Yeah. You can't fix it, even if you bring in a guy like O'Brien. And I'm not saying May's broken like that, but you can get there faster than maybe you think, you know, like two years isn't too long to realize that maybe someone's not what you thought they were. So let's just in the spirit of deciding whose fault it is after 1 week, I'll go around there. It's Josh McDaniels for you, right?
Yeah, of course it is.
Of course.
And he stinks.
The offense for you is the team not running the ball enough. That's kind of a Josh problem, isn't it?
That is, yeah. So this is two different conversations, though. I'm not blaming Drake's entire performance on Josh McDaniels. I just frankly think that's kind of ridiculous.
Well, I'm not blaming the entire performance on Josh McDaniels.
You just said he's ruining your guy and that he's putting a stallion in a dog park.
Yeah, because he's running a really crappy offense. Like I think that's fair. I think Drake May is culpable of having a few bad throws. Yes, I fully acknowledge that. He sailed. He's the one making those passes. He sailed those passes over Pop Douglas, over Hunter Henry. I totally agree. I'm not putting that aside. I'm just saying the entire rest of the game plan was horrendously bad. Like, it was so bad. And that is all Josh McDaniels. And so to me, it's like I have felt like immediately after the game, Mike Vrabel took a veiled shot at Josh McDaniels. In our interview with him on Monday morning, it felt like Mike Vrabel took another veiled shot at Josh McDaniels when it came to the game plan and it came to the running the football.
We'll need a more consistent, fine-tuned run plan.
And well, that's not a shot. That's just obvious. But I mean, what's he going to do? Sit there and say that he's comfortable with having 10 rushing yards in the second half?
You could phrase it another way than criticizing the offensive coordinator, which I didn't like Vrabel doing, by the way.
He could just say, we need to run the football more. Like, it's that simple, but he didn't. And so, to me, like, it put more in perspective that it felt like Josh McDaniels was forced on Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel's like, all right, fine. Like, he can be self-sufficient. He was a head coach at one point. Fine. Kraft, if you really want him in here because he's getting paid by another team already and he's cheap and easy and he's familiar with the organization, that's fine. Bring him in. He can do the offense. I'll help Terrell with the defense. That's why the defense was okay, not great at times in that game.
We have to understand it's his first game.
Like, I just think that Josh has way too much control when in reality, like, he has always needed Bill Belichick's guiding hand to have success.
Yeah, I just think that it's kind of yada-yadding past Drake's mechanical issues that he showed. And I think something that you were just talking about that's interesting, Arcan, is that last year, as much as people were very underwhelmed by the Alex Van Pelt offense, I do think that we can all agree that Alex Van Pelt looked like a pretty damn good quarterback's coach. Like, I think that the way that he handled Drake, and I'm not going to sit here and analyze, like, oh, does he still have the hitch? Is the hitch back? And all of that. But I thought that the way that he brought him along and all the concerns that people had, like Bill Belichick talking about his footwork from the draft to who he was by the time he was the starter for the Patriots. Like, I just want to see the progression of that again instead of the regression that we saw in week one that I don't think has a ton to do with the scheme as much as something with him personally. Now, if you told me he's jumpy, he's so uncomfortable because he is processing once he gets the football, it's happening too fast in front of him, then I'd say, okay, you need to streamline it for him and make him comfortable and have him be confident. But that also raises the question of why is it too much in front of him when Mac Jones could handle it? Cam Newton was, again, a mechanical issue, I think, more so than anything. But all these other quarterbacks were able to handle the Josh McDaniels
offense. I just think that in the first half, when you had the pocket moving a little bit, you had Drake May on the move a little bit, you were able to run some play action, he looked better. Especially the second half of the first quarter and the second quarter, he looked much better. And then from that final drive of the second quarter before halftime, when you could have gotten points and you were too conservative and didn't and gave the ball back to the Raiders, from that point on, it was just like straight drop back. It felt like shotgun straight drop back, under center straight drop back. There was no movement of the pocket, which is what Drake was most comfortable in.
Can I be the deciding vote in this?
Yes, by all means. King Solomon
over
here.
Okay, here we go. Here's the deal. You're both right. All right?
Okay.
You're
both right. That's
yes. Thank you, King.
Pick a side.
Yes. No.
Pick a side.
This is the nicest radio show I've ever done.
I'll tell you, you're both right, but if I had to lean who's a little bit righter, I think it's a little bit, I put a little bit more of it on on Drake May. I do.
I won double.
Look, I think you can make an argument for what Shime's saying too about Josh. I thought the run game, all of their runs went to the left side. Only one run to the left. It was all out of shotgun. It was all inside direct read zone plays. Nothing to the perimeter. Nothing. I thought the run game was just not a very creative one. How they attacked their running game. But I think the answer, truly, guys, it's a little bit of both, and they got to just find that happy place where they're both kind of firing off on all cylinders. But to me, the real answer is it's a little bit of both, but I lean more towards Drake May, and I think just. What was that?
That was Judge Bing.
That's it. Yeah. All right. So there you go. You're both right, and the case is missed. There
you go. I see both your sides to that.
Very good. One thing that I think is worth sort of pointing out, and Mega, you were touching on this a little bit, is that you're talking about now a young player in his second year with his second offensive coordinator, and you do have to do sort of a reset with that. I mean, you just have to. You have to reassign everything.
He hasn't even played 17 games of football yet.
Right. He hasn't played a full season yet, and he's already on his second one. And we saw this happen with Mac, too, not to the same extreme, and I think that May's a better player than Mac, but I think you're just really rolling the dice as an organization when you're making it so jumbled for a young player like this and expecting him to just be able to pick it up and go out there and perform when you're throwing all these new language at and all these other things for a 24-year-old, that seems
he's
like a
24,
lot.
He's not 24,
What is he?
He's
23.
23.
23, yeah.
23.
Yep, 23. Yeah.
And it's just, it's hard too because everybody vilifies him when he throws. Is it vilify or villainize? Either way.
Vilify. Yeah,
yeah, vilifies him.
What you're doing to Josh McDaniel.
Yeah. Very much so. When he throws interceptions, people are like, yeah, bench his ass. He sucks. Bench him. When in reality, a lot of times you just have to
have
patience.
Who's saying that, Shime?
Everyone.
Saying bench him for they want to. Who wants to bench May for Josh?
Everybody says if the interceptions continue, they don't want him to continue.
Can I tell you something?
Everyone's saying that.
I hear it every day on my show.
You didn't hear the straw man saying that? Can I just? I will say this.
I hear it constantly.
People are begging for Josh Dobbs.
No, they're not begging for Josh Dobbs, but they're saying that his career will be very short lived if he continues throwing interceptions.
We've gotten a couple Joe Milton.
Well, that may be true,
but like at the same time, you. There needs to be some semblance of patience, right?
Yes.
I mean, and that's the issue is that
it's
no
NFL,
patience.
There isn't patience.
But
yeah, it's not
there
a
needs
Patriot
to be.
Thing.
You look at some of the great quarterbacks in NFL history over the last 25, 30 years, guys like Brett Favre and Peyton Manning threw a million interceptions to start their career.
Okay.
A million
What's
and
the
then
difference?
Turned into great
What's
quarterbacks.
What's the difference, though? Can I just tell you, Brett Favre would throw three interceptions in the first half, and then he'd throw four touchdowns in the second half and beat you.
Sure.
Peyton Manning did that all the time.
Yeah.
It's Can you rebound from your mistakes? What happened to Drake May after he threw that interception?
He sailed a couple passes on the next series.
So I don't disagree, but like you also have to give him time to learn to fight back in that way and be resilient, right? Because in Peyton Manning's rookie year, he wasn't that way. He just threw 26 interceptions. In Brett Favre's second year in the NFL, he was 19 touchdowns, 24 interceptions. Like then they learned to be, okay, if I make a mistake, I come back and sling it. Josh Allen did the same thing just a couple years ago where he threw, 17 interceptions in a season, but it's because he's also getting 35 touchdowns. And so it's you have to allow these guys, there has to be some portion of patience for these guys, for this guy in particular, to just cut it loose. You as the offensive coordinator cannot be so stricken with fear of turning the football
really on the process. Mm-hmm.
This team is not a Super Bowl contender. This kid needs to learn what he can and can't get away with. And if you're not allowing him to do that, you're not allowing him to grow in the direction he needs to go. Instead, you're keeping him contained in this box, which is why I do the stallion in the dog park analogy, mm-hmm. because you're keeping him contained in this little box. Like, this is how you need to play instead of letting him play to his strength and play how he plays and has always played and then teaching him what not to do with that.
Okay, with all that said, there is another piece of news here on the Patriots offense, and it involves wide receiver Jalen Polk, who was already out for the year with a shoulder injury, but when he comes back, he's going to be on a new team in 2026 as the Patriots agreed to trade Polk to the Saints. They'll get a 2027 sixth-round pick, and they also send a 2028 seventh-round pick to New Orleans along with the second round pick of Jalen Polk, who was drafted last year. Not a guy you can blame Belichick for, although some people will probably figure out a way to. But that was a an Elliott Wolf pick and a continuation of some terrible drafts that Bill had for sure. But yeah, just more of the same. Tyquan Thornton, another second round pick. He was in Kansas City. I saw him making some catches in the preseason, and or maybe it was the regular season. Was he making catches in that first game? I think
he was.
First
game. Yeah, when Xavier Worthy went down, Tyquan Thornton got like six targets.
We've gone over the long, long list of busts at wide receiver that this team has drafted over the years. It is long, it is depressing, and here is the latest addition to that list. Jalen Polk and the offense in general, a big problem is not getting any production from the wide receiver room, and he was a big example of that. On the converse side of this, Kayshon Booty had a very, very strong first game and maybe someone that Drake May is building the kind of chemistry with that can take him to that next level, Shime, that you're talking about, but that was, you know, one of the few. There's really not a lot of draft picks like that that come here and are able to produce. And Jalen Polk, just another big example of that, I would say. One of the worst too.
Because that was so bad.
Well, he was about as bad as there was.
I looked this up. The Patriots have never discarded a second round or first round draft pick as fast as they did with Jalen Polk. Mm. That is no one has been drafted that high and been released that fast. Or traded.
Even guys like Cyrus Jones and Dominique
Easley? Yeah, Easley. Dominique Easley.
Yeah.
The guy with two bad knees.
Yeah.
They were here longer, I think, than a year in two games.
Yeah, 100%. Malcolm Brown, who stunk.
The Patriots, by far, have the least amount of players on their rosters of players that were drafted between 2021 and 2024. They only have five guys remaining in all of those drafts still on this year's team. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's why you have a disjointed team. That's why you got to spend so much in free agency, because you can't, the guys that you draft, you don't ever sign to second contracts. And that's why they have a disjointed team like they have.
Yeah, certainly seems that way. This also got a pile on from Adam Schefter. As we all remember, in the 2024 draft, the Patriots traded the number 34 overall pick in the second round to the Chargers. Chargers selected Ladd McConkey. Schefter, Patriots used that 37th pick to draft Polk. He was traded today to the Saints for a 6th-round pick. Thanks, Schefter, by the way. We didn't already feel bad about that.
Yeah.
Thanks for rubbing it in there. But, yeah, another example, I think, of just not even, you know.
Not even close.
Not even close. And just such a poor read on the prospects in this draft.
It's the same thing with Pickens a couple years ago. They have no sense of how to draft a wide receiver. Yeah. None.
I feel like we've been having the same conversation since the N'Keal Harry draft. It's just,
I mean, forever, even before that.
What can you? There's nothing new to say at this point other than you need a new system. You need somebody new in place there. We used to talk about Bill Belichick. Now it's all Elliott. We'll see what this draft class looks like this year and the next couple years, and if you're able to stack that. But it feels like, other than Drake May, which is okay, you got the quarterback. That 2024 draft feels like another loss.
It doesn't
class.
Give you much hope for Kyle Williams either, does
nope.
it?
No, it does not.
Who I kind of liked coming into the draft.
It gives me hope for someone else, though, that is someone across from me is a big fan of that I think should get some playing
Wasn't
time.
Wasn't drafted.
I think he should get, playing time today, as a matter of fact. Because when I look at what happened, the production from DeMario Douglas last week, yeah, he had a nice little touchdown. That was good. But 7 targets and 2 catches.
Also had a massive drop.
2 yards.
Also had a massive drop in the middle of the field. He was wide open. Drake hit him in the hands and he just dropped it.
Let's get Efton Chisholm out there. Let's go. Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
Efton,
I'm not even kidding.
In week 2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, he's got the Seattle Supersonics shirt on today.
I'm not the Slam Magazine cover.
Yeah, Ray Allen. That was pretty cool.
617-779-7937 is your phone number here on Football Sunday, WEEI. Mark is in Connecticut with a thought on Efton Chisholm. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, so let's rewind a little bit.
Okay.
Shime, I love you, brother, and I love listening to you on the Greg Hill Show, and they got to give you more, you know, more at it, because you are spot on the whole Drake May thing.
Thank you.
You know, it's just they're not using his athletic ability. They're not rolling him out. They're just not using his ability to just thrive. Chisholm should get a shot now. I've been raving about this kid all off season. You know, it's time to give another kid a shot, and I really think that he's just got that it factor. He ran the fastest 3-cone, I believe, at the combine and got undrafted because of his 40 time.
All right, Efton Chisholm, is this? I mean, he's, I think, active today.
Do we know that for sure?
I think he's going to be activated today. I was reading about that. We'll see if he actually is or not.
Okay, let's go.
But yeah, is this one of those guys that you fall in love with in the preseason that you love in camp and that everyone sort of gets all excited about? Like, what was that running back, JJ? What was his name?
JJ Taylor.
Taylor, yeah. Is this
Please
another JJ Taylor?
Bring up my JJ.
Is this another Megos JJ? Is that what's happening here?
I don't think that happens quite as often with skill guys. It definitely happens with quarterbacks quite frequently here.
There was a guy a couple years ago, Christian Wilkerson. I liked him a lot in camp.
Oh, yeah, the receiver.
Yeah, he was making plays, and then he was gone. Yeah.
The punt returner for a long time.
Did Christian Wilkerson make records at his college?
I don't believe so. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember much about him. I just remember he made Mac look pretty good in the preseason.
Did FN Chisholm show out at all in OTAs or training camp? Did you?
Yeah. He definitely showed out in OTAs. And I would say in training camp, it was a little less apparent because he ran with the twos so often.
But he was showing out against the twos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I think Efton, the best thing he has going for him when you talk about Pop Douglas is his hands. I mean, he's got really, really strong hands.
Strong hands, and he also gets open fast.
He understands space. He's not the fastest guy, but he understands space.
You need to give Drake May fast solutions, particularly over the middle of the field.
Tell him,
Ted. And Efton, okay, so he doesn't run a 40 fast. Who cares? Can he get open fast? That's what I want to know. And he can. Probably better than anyone on the team. So why isn't the kid playing? He needs to be playing.
All right. We will know later on in the day if he's active or not. We'll let you know about that around 11:30. In the meantime, coming up next, we'll inside the locker room with Megan Ottolini. Mac Hollins is who she talked to today. No shoes. We'll all take our shoes off in here.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
To right after this. Kayshon Booty, a lone bright spot. Well, not the lone bright spot, but one of the few bright spots of the Patriots' 20-13 loss to the Raiders last week. A good day for Booty. 6 catches, 103 yards on 8 targets. Averaged about 17 yards per carry. Longest was a 24-yard reception. Him and Drake May, I thought last year it started to show signs of developing something, and there wasn't a lot of that with really anybody else in the wide receiver room. Mm-hmm. Hunter Henry and Austin Hooper, I think, both had productive years. But wide receiver-wise, it seemed like with Booty, there was really something growing there, and it looks like there is again in this season. And with 103 yards, and you heard him talking after that, we know why he dropped in the draft. Kayshon Booty, I think, fancies himself a number one wide receiver. Do you think he can be that?
I'm skeptical, but I have an open mind. I'm willing to. I want to see it, but I do like the mindset of him. I mean, I liked what he said after the game. Do you remember he said something to the effect that he just didn't like how flat they were coming out in the second half, and it's like, okay, that's like what a veteran receiver would say. I just like a guy that started way below where he thought he would and has fought to kind of get to where he thinks he should be. And just to kind of highlight what I think he can do in today's game, last week he ran 40 pass routes. 24 of the 40 routes were vertical routes. And so he's the best guy vertically for this team. He was last year, and so far in just one game, he's proven it to be the case this year. The Dolphins last week versus the Colts got chewed up. The Dolphins defense did by the Colts vertical routes. The Colts were 5 of 6 on vertical routes for 113 yards last week versus the Dolphins. So if there's an area you can exploit in that Dolphins secondary, it is vertical routes.
Vertical routes.
Yeah, I agree. I think he just gives you something a little different compared to a lot of the other guys in the room. I would throw Mac Hollins into that category, too, just because of his size, because he's actually, above 6'1". I think you have a lot of smaller guys who move inside. And so is Kayshon going to be a number one? Like, this is a question that we ask a lot of times about these Josh McDaniels offenses. And I'm not sure that you need a number one, as long as you have complementary pass catchers. And I think they have the capability of having that. So, like, is he a one last week and Steph is the one this week and it changes depending on the defense you see? Like, you make a good point with the vertical threat, so maybe he's a one again this week. I don't think he needs to be, hey, this is your over 1,000-yard receiver.
I think a one encompasses every aspect of what it takes to be a wide receiver, though. A one can take a slant route, you know, more times than not to the house if he takes the right angle. I think a one can work the short to intermediate to deep parts of the field where it feels like Kayshon is a little bit of a one-trick pony.
He's very much not a one.
Ones, they don't have weaknesses in their games, right? And so I think Kayshon's more of a two, but a high-end three, really, is where I'd put him.
I agree. I totally agree with that assessment, Ted. Like, he is a two, maybe a high-end three on a really good football team. He's just the one on this team because he has the best relationship with the quarterback. I think that's kind of where we're at here, is Drake feels the most comfortable throwing to him, and I think to Hunter Henry. And that's why they are going to get the bulk of the targets, at least going forward. I think you need to force more opportunities for Stephon Diggs, because I think at his peak he's going to be the best possible player on this team.
What I liked about Steph Diggs last week, even though it wasn't too impressive, he caught five of the six balls that were thrown to him.
Yeah,
that's a high. You know, as long as they're, you know, if he's targeting him, you want him to be catching 90% of the targets that is thrown to him.
I just want him involved sooner. I want him involved earlier in the game to get a faster start. Drake was talking about a fast start this week. Get Stephon Diggs involved earlier, because I thought he was pretty good the second half.
I think it was tough, too, because, like, I think he was brought in to kind of be that man beater, and they just played zone, like, left and right. And so it was tough for them right off the rip to go to him, and instead he was finding Kayshon Booty because he knew where Kayshon Booty would sit in those open zones. And, so, like, that was kind of the whole difference
just
there.
Just so people understand what Shime is saying, that the Raiders played they didn't play any man-to-man. And they played a lot of cover two. And so you know how you get it. If teams are playing you in cover two, that means they're going to basically make life impossible for you to throw down the field.
Which is why you should have been running the football even more.
There's the point. And so you exploit cover two by running the football.
Yeah, cover two got super popular after that insane, like, Patrick Mahomes MVP season a couple years ago. Yep. And everybody after Lou Anarumo did it started playing cover two. And it's like, oh, this is the new wave of the NFL. And that's why you saw running backs make a huge comeback, because it's like, oh, you're going to play two guys deep, I'm going to run the football.
Mack Hollins only caught one ball for 3 yards. Wasn't big involved in the pass game, although a lot of different guys caught passes in that game. Mego caught up with Mack Hollins as we go inside the locker room with Megan Ottolini.
Inside the locker room with Megan Ottolini.
So obviously you spent the last year in Buffalo, so you're familiar with some of the Dolphins defense, at least from prior years. What do you expect from them for your offense now?
They're going to come out and play hard every game that I've played against them. And even when I was there, obviously that was a little while ago. They play hard and they play some fundamental defense. So it's important for us to execute the way we're supposed to execute and do our job in every play.
There's been a lot of history with the Patriots going down to Florida in September. What are the challenges that you guys have discussed about just playing in that atmosphere and playing in those conditions?
I don't know. I live down there, so it doesn't bother me. I don't really much talk about the weather. Like, I love the heat, and I know a lot of other guys enjoy it. And I wish history meant something in football, because that means we'd have a lot of Super Bowl rings kind of guaranteed for us. But history doesn't much matter. So we're not focused on that. We're just focused on if we can execute, we'll be all right.
What do you think you guys as an offense can do to kind of sustain some of the momentum that you found at times in the game on Sunday, but then we're, you know, running into some fits and starts maybe?
Yeah, it goes back to what I was saying about execution. Like, every guy needs to execute. The thing with offense is you never know when your slip up or laziness or feeling comfortable is going to mess up the whole entire play. You know, sometimes on defense, one guy making the play can kind of fix a mistake that somebody else may have made. But on offense, if one guy misses a block, if one guy runs the wrong route, if the quarterback does the wrong read, it can destroy a whole play. So just making sure all 11 are on the same page and executing.
Heard a lot about communication in the wake of the loss. How do you feel like you guys are able to improve that this week in preparation for the Dolphins?
I think preparing more. I think quiet teams are teams that don't feel as prepared as they could be. Not always true when you're you know, week one, week two, when you're just building up. Sometimes you just like feel like, oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk. But feeling like, hey, I'm prepared enough where I can say this is supposed to be this or this. Like, you're not trying to hurt anybody. You're either giving a call or getting a call. So every time you have to have that confidence.
Finally, how much extra pressure, even though it's only week two, is there going on the road seeing a divisional rival or opponent?
I don't feel any other pressure. I think it's just ball. Like, every week we're supposed to win, whether it's AFC, NFC, division, whatever it is. Your goal is to win the game. You don't prepare all week and sit in meetings and go out there and practice and bang heads so that you can hope to win. You go out there just like get a chance and really prepare yourself to win. Not there's pressure here, so I don't know, I might act different. But we're going out there to win.
Mac Hollins there with Mego in the locker room. Mego, was he wearing shoes? He probably wasn't, right, when you talked to him?
I don't think I was looking at his feet. Wow. I was maintaining eye contact in our conversation.
Oh, very professional.
Wow. Oh, excuse me.
Very
eyes
professional.
Up here. Good job, Mego.
You don't look down, huh? Below that, I got
Walter Cronkite right over here. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
BJ journalist.
But I have to assume he's got...
Oh, I'm sorry. I won't bring my conversations with the players to the show
no
anymore.
No,
I just want to know if they have shoes on.
We want you to keep bringing them. It's okay.
I mean, if you're not going to wear shoes, you could have really nice feet is what I'm thinking.
Well, sure. Yeah.
I was hoping Mego could get us a review of his feet, but I
bet he does a lot of foot peels.
He's too professional.
A lot of foot peels and pedicures.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
No, he does.
100% has to.
Or maybe it's just au naturel. You know, it could be that too. Not exactly a ringing endorsement about the communication on this team in that question, which I thought was a good question. He wasn't exactly going, no, we're really communicating well. You didn't hear him push back on that much. He sort of just, discussed it and then moved on to the next thing.
Well, it's kind of funny because he's a super communicative guy, like among his teammates. He's very chatty, so.
Very good. All right. They Said It, Football Edition with Chris Scheim is coming your way next. We'll hear from Mike Vrabel, Tyreek Hill, Tua, and Tom Brady, among others. That's coming up next here on Football Sunday, WEEI.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.